Good afternoon. I'd like to call the meeting, today's meeting, the April 23rd meeting of the Ways and Means Committee to order. A quorum is present. We will start, just before we start, I'll just go over the agenda briefly because there's a bit of a change. We will be hearing House File 2431, the Omnibus Higher Education Budget Bill, and House File 2438, the Omnibus Transportation Budget Bill. Those will both be moved on to the General Register. House File 2783, the Omnibus State Government Budget Bill, will be laid over. We will not be hearing the Omnibus Election Bill today. That is being moved to tomorrow. So first, we will take a look at the minutes from the last meeting. Representative Agbaje, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Reviewed and so moved, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor of moving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Minutes are approved. Thank you. First up today is House File 2431, the Omnibus Higher Education Budget Bill. I'll move that bill before the committee. The motion is to place it on the General Register. Before we get to the bill, however, there is a DE4 amendment and an amendment to the DE4. So I'll move the DE4 amendment to come now before the committee. Make that official. And we have an amendment to the DE4 amendment. Who would like to explain the amendment to the DE4?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is primarily technical, although the last...
Can you just dive into that microphone, because my hearing aids aren't that great.
I will get closer and louder. Is that better?
That's better.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Chair, the first three parts of the amendment are technical in nature. There are a few things that in the drafting either were left off or that needed to be corrected. The last line of that amendment is something that we discussed in the higher ed committee and that we agreed to remove. It pertains to the ALS research grants in honor of Tomasoni. And it was said that in the language that it included for-profit entities that they could use that. It was something that OHE did not do to for-profit entities, and so we are going to be removing that, and I want to thank Chair Liebling for pointing that out. She is also a policy hawk. So that is what the amendment does. It's primarily technical with one addition of an agreed upon between the chair and myself and the committee.
Thank you, Chair Rarick. Any comments at Chair Wolgamott?
No, I believe that my co-chair explained the amendment as thoroughly as needs be.
Thank you. Any questions from members regarding the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. A2 is amended to the DE4. Now on to the DE4 as amended. Would the chairs like to run through the DE4 before we approve it? Who wants to go first?
I can go first, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
Chair Wolgamott.
Well, Chair Torkelson, Chair Stevenson, and honorable members of the Ways and Means Committee, thank you for the opportunity to present this DE amendment. It is the reflection of our bipartisan compromise in the House Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee that has been agreed to by myself and Chair Rarick. The DE reflects the circumstances that we were in with this committee giving us a zero target while also working together to try to find solutions for the $239 million deficit in the state grant program. A few of the high-view components of this bill, we used both through funding but also through what's called levers to deal with the state grant program. It caps the state grant to match tuition increases at Minn State and the University of Minnesota schools at 1%, treats the assigned family responsibility for students with the negative student aid index as zero. It reduces the limit of 180 credits for coverage of the state grant to 120 credits. It eliminates four Office of Higher Education programs as well as cuts funding to others. It continues funding to 38 Office of Higher Education programs. It cuts funding to the University of Minnesota and Mayo Partnership, the Mayo Medical School, and the Mayo Family Medicine Residency Programs, and it redirects the, as Co-Chair Rarick mentioned, the ALS funding money from the University of Minnesota to the Office of Higher Education. Those are a few of the components of this, Mr. Chair, but I'm sure that my esteemed co-chair can provide further insight to this amendment.
Thank you, Chair Welgemont. Chair Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, so he went through the high-level points of that. I think what's important to understand is that we prioritize students and families to make sure that they could go to college and have as much paid for as possible. I'm very happy about a component of the cap on tuition. And so it's very hard to kind of put some parameters around what happens at the institutions. And this is one way we can have some control over tuition. So it's if the University of Minnesota raises their tuition more than 1%, the state grant will not cover that. We're hoping that that's an incentive that they don't raise it more than 1%. We will see. Right now, I think in the last year, they had a 4.5% increase in tuition, and they continue to have high increases in tuition. So that's a fantastic part. The other thing I would say is that something that happened at the federal level with FAFSA was a change to the negative. So a number could go negative for the student aid index, and it caused literally the state grant money to go out like a fire hose. It was intense. It was a lot. In some cases, it was more than $1,500 going out just in cash. And let me tell you what happened with some of that cash being on the fraud committee. So one of the things that happened that we have found at one of the Minn State two-year colleges is that for some of the programs that they had, there were ghost students. So there were students that signed up for online courses, and nobody showed up online. So it was purely online. And one professor estimated that 50% of his classes were ghost students. These same students were getting this negative student aid index money, so cash back to them. And it was fraudulently taken. So by bringing this number to zero, we are then cutting off that fraud. I'm very, very happy to do two things. We're preserving the state grant program for those that really need it, and we're cutting fraud off at the legs. So I just want you to understand how important that part of this is. The other thing I would say is that after we looked at the entire budget, top to bottom, we did a very extensive overview for those that are on the committee. There are a few also here that are on the higher ed committee. We did extensive reviews. We looked at every single nonprofit that had gotten money through the higher ed budget, and we did what we've talked about all session, which is looked at the 990s. We looked at, in fact, 3 years of 990s, 3 years of audits. We looked at the salaries of their CEOs, and we made cuts accordingly. So there are cuts to the budget that are specifically related to that overview. And when we found exorbitant salaries of CEOs and their staff, we cut that appropriation. So I'm very proud to say that we are actually doing that as well. So the other thing I would say is that cuts are not easy. And negotiations were not easy, and in fact, thank you, Chair Torkelson and Chair Stevenson had to pick up the ball at the end to close up the bill. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more cut because we do have, obviously, in the future, we've got some problems that we're looking at. But we were able to reappropriate $33 million to put back into the state grant program. I was hoping for a little bit more, but that is where we landed. And in the tails, it was $35 million back into the state grant program. So closing that gap. There still is a $62 million gap that we're hoping to resolve when we get to the Senate. So the work is not done. The work continues. But I'm very happy with the progress that we've made, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairs. I will turn to fiscal staff now to review the target. Ms. Adrians.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The Higher Education Finance Committee this session received a target of no change for the fiscal years 26 and 27, and then the target for the committee for the tails for fiscal years 28 and 29 was also no change from the February forecast-based spending amounts.
Did I put the bill on the table yet?
Well, we can do that just to be certain. I thought you did.
I think you moved it.
We're on the table, right?
We're on the DE amendment.
We're on the DE 4.
Yeah.
We need to adopt that amendment.
We need to adopt that and then move to the bill and then discussion.
Sorry, I'm catching up, kids. Don't worry. We will, at this point, adopt the DE2 as amended, then we'll go to member DE4 as amended, and then we'll go to member discussion. All those in favor of adopting the DE4 as amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. DE4 as amended is adopted. At this point, we will go to member questions, either on the bill or on the spreadsheet. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to Chair Torkelson, and thanks to both chairs for your work. Chair Rarick had a chance to describe ways in which he sort of would have preferred the bill to be maybe possibly different, recognizing this is an agreement, a negotiated agreement. So I just wanted to see if Chair Wolgamott wanted to have the chance to do the same sort of thing. Wasn't sure if he did, but just in case he wanted to. Thank you, Chair Torkelson.
Chair Wolgamott.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson, and thank you, Chair Pinto. Absolutely, this is a compromise bill. I would have, as I mentioned in committee, I'm sure that if Chair Rarick was not a co-chair but a chair, this bill would look a lot different. And I know that if I were the chair and not the co-chair, the bill would look a lot different. But the voters sent us a tight house, and Chair Rarick and I and our incredible staff did our very best to work together to find a bill that we could bring to both of our caucuses and feel good about the progress that we're making to achieve our goals. And this bill reflects the success of that accomplishment.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Any other member questions? Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the chairs of the committee for your work. I think this is more of a statement. You know, Chair Rarick talked about how cuts are really difficult and, you know, all of the programs that support students are valuable in their own ways. I guess I just wanted to talk a little bit about the Student Parent Support Initiative. So it's line 6.8. And you know, if you have a kid when you're young, you really face unique challenges. You know, I don't have like the statistics, right? But it's really difficult on the parent, on the young person who's parenting, and it's really difficult on their children. And so, you know, the fact that we've made the decision to invest in those families in a unique way that acknowledges the unique challenges that those families face, I just think is a really good thing. It's one of those kind of it's one of those things that it's hard for us at the legislature because we run off spreadsheets and we don't have a good way of evaluating the cost of not doing things and the cost of not intervening on our other public systems. So this is a direct cost, you know, to support these families to get education and to, you know, achieve greater economic stability for themselves and for their babies and for their children, and so that they don't face those kind of generational impacts of poverty, which we see in our communities, and how difficult it is to escape from that, from those. So, you know, the idea of taking this program and again, like, when you don't, if you don't pay for something now, a lot of times, when we don't make investments in families to help them get out of poverty, to help them, you know, achieve the goals that they have for themselves through education and employment, a lot of times those have costs to other public systems. And so I just, it's hard to see us really zeroing out this appropriation. It's because, it goes from like 6 million, I don't know what the base is. So, 4 million below base for the biennium, and then sets a base of zero in fiscal 28 and later. So we're not even like maintaining a toehold in our budget for this program. And, you know, it's a really deep cut. And like I said, I know that you guys had hard decisions to make, but I just wanted to say that, you know, I hope that there's room to at least maintain something in that program so that it continues to exist. And so that, you know, if we find ourselves in a different fiscal position in the future, that it's not establishing a new thing. It's trying to restore what it is that we have to cut. So thanks, Mr. Chair.
Representative Cotizo-Attune.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, chairs, for all the work that you did, all the consideration, and the hard choices that you and your committee had to make this session. I'm grateful that Chair Gomez just talked a little bit about the student parent supports, but I also wanted to just talk about my support in particular for the Fostering Independence grants, and I know that they're receiving base funding, so I really appreciate that there weren't cuts in that area. The program has been, to this point, tremendously successful and has seen a lot of participation. Of course, these grants go out to students who are currently in or formerly in the foster care system, so students that we have, on some level, failed, right? And so I think that just in my circles as a foster adoptive parent, and I know Representative Chair Rarick, your family has been very closely connected to foster care throughout your lifetime. We all, I think, share that responsibility and the support for those children. And I think, I hope that going forward we can continue to find money to increase this this particular grant program, because these kids, the data is really scary. If we don't make the investments necessary, if they don't have access to earlier interventions in their young lives, if they aren't able to be adopted out of the system, if they don't have those important connections, the data around homelessness, the data around suicide, those sorts of things really end up kind of leading them down a scary path. And so I think that just I just really wanted to say that I appreciate that there weren't cuts made in that area, and that hopefully we can continue moving forward into the future to make sure that all of those kids have access to the opportunity to attend secondary schooling and or postgraduate work, and lift themselves out of the situation that they have been dealt. So thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I speak to that?
Chair Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for saying that. And I and my colleagues were fierce advocates last biennium to make sure that we backfilled $5 million into that program, and it went into the base. So the $8.8 million that you see is a result of our work last biennium, and we wanted to make sure that we did not hurt that. And in fact, when we were on break, some of the new estimates came out, and so now we're grappling with that, right? And so we didn't know that as we were putting the bill together. We didn't know that as we were doing committee work. It was as we were on break and when we came back, to a surprise of, oh, okay. So now we've got some work to do ahead, but I appreciate that. And yes, my family were, my parents fostered many, many, many kids, and two of them became part of our family and never left. And so, and I still call both of them brother. So even though they're in their 60s and 70 now, they're still my brother. So I appreciate you saying that. But we're committed to making sure that we do everything we can. Again, with a zero target, it's a little tough to do those things. We looked so carefully through the budget, and it was painful to try to figure out how do we backfill a $239 million hole in the state grant program. But we were adamant we weren't going to touch FIG. We weren't going to touch the child care grants. You know, anything that was direct to students, we did not want to touch. We looked at other things outside of that. But we did the best that we could with the situation we found ourselves in. So thank you for acknowledging that.
Representative Iwaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, co-chairs. I know zero targets are very tough, especially when there's so many needs out there. I just wanted to say I do have a little concern about just doing base budget for family medicine residency programs in an HCMC for residency. We really do need more family physicians across the state. My daughter was in a rural medicine program up at Duluth, and is going into internal medicine in rural areas, and it's so important that we keep investing in those items, because without residency programs, you don't have slots in medical school, and then you don't have doctors. So just wanted to put that on the record.
Other members, Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chairs, I will, before I go to you to close, I'll just thank you for your work. I know it's not been an easy task. None of this work is easy, but thank you for your bipartisanship and work together. Any closing remarks on the bill? We'll go first to Representative Wolgamott.
Well, thank you again, Chair Torkelson and Chair Stevenson and members of the Ways and Means Committee for hearing our bill. Again, I just want to thank Co-Chair Rarick for her partnership in this session. As we've said, not easy. We do have differences of perspective on things, but I'm really proud of this bipartisan bill that is before you, and we look forward to continuing to work together to do good things for our committee as we go on the floor and into conference and into final passage. So thank you again to Co-Chair Rarick, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Co-Chair Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Representative Joachim, because we actually really dug deep into those budgets for all the residency programs. We did deep dives onto everything, but in particular, I had Hennepin Health come back because they only got 10 minutes at the end of committee, and it just wasn't enough to really understand their need and how they use the money. And so I actually had them come back. So I just want you to know that we spent a lot of time, more time than probably has ever been done, all those residency programs, all of them, to really do a deep dive and understand how they function, what they use the money for, how many folks they train. So I hear you, and we understand it. And I was kind of expecting Chair Wolgamott to talk about a new program that's starting up in the St. Cloud area with CenterCare. So the one thing that was added to this budget, the only thing, is a new residency program up in St. Cloud with CenterCare. It's a partnership between the University of Minnesota and CenterCare. So hopefully that'll give you some solace. The other programs that you mentioned are very good programs, which is why they are not cut. They did a really great job in their presentation, even though one had to come back and do it twice. But thank you for that. And I would just say that, stay tuned, because we will be debating and working with the Senate to try to come up with an even better bill. So I look forward to that process as we move from here to the floor and then to the Senate, to conference committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Seeing no further discussion, the chair moves that House File 2431 as amended be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 2431 is amended, is placed on the general register. I also ask that nonpartisan staff may make any technical changes that are necessary to reflect the will of the committee. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is House File 2438, the Omnibus Transportation Budget Bill. Chair moves House File 2438 to be placed on the general register. Welcome, co-chairs, to the committee. Why don't we go ahead and hear about your bill? Who wants to go first?
Mr. Chair, do we want to introduce the bill, or there
Let's
is...
Let's do the amendment first.
The amendment.
Who wants to explain the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I appreciate... Chair Kosnick.
Thank you. The A21 amendment is kind of a co-author's amendment, just to address some technical items that were missed in the original engrossment or need corrections that are needed. It addresses a trunk highway fund balance to fall within MnDOT's guidelines. There's a debt service amount that is corrected. The DPS strategy reductions to better notate the which office of the Office of Communications instead of Office of Public Support. There was just more of a technical correction or an ease of implementation for the electronic e-bike rebate program that is included in the bill. And there was a 911 fund appropriation for the armor towers that is going to be taken up in the public safety bill instead of the transportation bill. And there was, I think that was the majority of the 821 amendment.
Thank you. Chair Cagle, any comments on the 821 amendment?
I think the only thing is with the e-bike rebate, what they're, the clarification on that is that they're going to verify income after the lottery. And so it saves some administrative time for the folks over at DOR.
Thank you, Chair Cagle. The 821 is before us. Any member questions on the 821 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the 821 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The 821 amendment is adopted to the bill. To the bill. Now, Chair Kosnick, would you like to go first?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members and members of the public. Chair Cagle and I worked hard in committee and in putting together a bill. I think it's a balanced bill that makes our roads safer, helps us design and maintain our roads smarter, and also makes our transportation system more sustainable. Keeping in mind a couple factors as we put our finance pieces of the bill together is that currently transportation is facing a $1.1 billion per year funding maintenance gap. That means that just to maintain our current system, we are short $1.1 billion a year, according to the department. And then also the other factor is traditionally there's trunk highway bonding that's included in a bonding bill, and with the budget situation that the state is facing in the ongoing this year and in the tails with the deficit, the bonding cap that the bonding committee is experiencing, we made reallocations to offset some of the pressure on the bonding committee, and so there are projects included in the bill that reduce the demand on the bonding committee by over $100 million. And so that's kind of how we started to frame the bill. And as I mentioned, there are a variety of both Democrat and Republican provisions in the bill. I don't want to guess I'd name them off. We can stand for questions. But there's a lot of good stuff for everybody in the bill, and I do understand that there, as all the bills that are coming forward, there are other things that maybe cause a little heartburn for some members. But overall, I believe it's a balanced transportation bill that keeps us moving forward.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick. Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just some of the quick highlights from kind of my perspective of the bill. We were able to keep Metro Mobility whole, so there was no cuts. We were able to keep EV infrastructure in place. We got some money to the Duluth Airport for their air tower. We were able to protect safe roads to school, and one of the other things that we were able to do is make sure that we were able to bond against the sales tax for Metro Council, so they're able to start building out some of the capital projects. We were able to protect active transportation, and we were able to get some of the e-bike policy changes around that. We were also able to get some traffic calming safety to Minneapolis, as well as continue the Empowering Small Communities program. And so those are just kind of some of the highlights for our end. Some of the things that kind of caused some heartburn for our caucus was, cuts to transit and delaying greenhouse gases. But I'm hoping that, through conference committee, we can maybe make some of that policy and spending trend in the right direction. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Cagle. This time I'll turn to nonpartisan staff for review of the target.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The Transportation Finance Committee received a target of no change from the February forecast-based spending in both the 26 and 27 fiscal year biennium, as well as the fiscal year 28-29 biennium.
Thank you. We will now move to member discussion of House File 2038 as amended, 2438 as amended. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to either of the authors, it's my understanding after perusing the bill and talking to some folks that there's still some discussions going on between MnDOT, the asphalt advocates, that there's some discussion going on about some of the language in your bill. Could you maybe detail that a little bit more and maybe give us some thoughts about where that is dispositionally before this gets all wrapped up?
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Chair Nash. There is, as I mentioned earlier, there's provisions in this bill that I think make it smarter on how we maintain our highway system. Part of that is a resilient pavement program, and it's intended to be materials neutral, whether it's concrete or asphalt. And by building smarter, investing a little bit more early on, we can double the life of the programs. It's actually a Chair Cagle provision that I support. In terms of the discussion, we've had it in the bill, had a hearing, had it in markup, and I will continue to meet with stakeholders. But at this point, there is no agreement on changing the language that's in the bill. So we're going to proceed with what we have and have had. And but we will continue to talk to the stakeholders, and if there's a agreement on different resolution, I'd be happy to hear it.
Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a quick question.
Microphone.
Oh, yeah, gotta love that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question and a comment. Question is there anything in here that deals directly with the North Star Light Rail project or current line, as it, we know it all has problems. Second point, so you don't need to come back to me, is I appreciate your guys' ability to work together, particularly when it comes to the greenhouse gas emissions delay. That evaluation was going to be so difficult, especially for fixing the rest of Highway 65, and I even had numerous members of the Democrat Party of elected officials throughout my community and county saying, this is a big problem. We need to change the way this works. What can we do? So I appreciate you guys at least working together to find a way to delay it, because it's going to be a problem for future expansion of Highway 65, so it's personally concerning to me. And we can perhaps figure out a way to do it in a more effective manner with this delay. But to my question on the North Star light rail line, I'd be interested to hear if anything in here affects that.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative West. We did not do anything with the North Star line. Met Council have their recommendations, or had their evaluation, I should say. There was actually no recommendations that came out of that study. But looking at that, there is high demand for intercity passenger rail on that corridor. And we're lucky right now that the Big Sky corridor is looking at their second phase of corridor ID, which then could turn that line into an intercity passenger rail all the way out to, you could take the train to Yellowstone. And so that would also add some additional stops in Minnesota, including Detroit Lakes, one by Camp Ripley maybe, and then St. Cloud, and then down to the Twin Cities. So I think the appetite really there is to get that into more of an intercity passenger rail. And so there actually is going to be a town hall this weekend up in St. Cloud to discuss that as well. So, and I will turn the greenhouse gas emissions piece over to Chair Kosnick.
Chair Kosnick.
Thank you. Representative West, Chair West, the North Star project, we did have a bill hearing in the committee to request MnDOT and the Met Council give the FTA notice that they would like to terminate it. We did not include that in the bill. It has been publicly noted by Met Council and MnDOT that they are pursuing how to disband and reallocate resources in that corridor through buses and terminate the North Star operations. The greenhouse gas emissions, I understand, is a little bit, it's a point of contention for many members, but as you pointed out, we listened to county engineers, local partners, city engineers, and others that we need to fully understand how the mitigation offsets will work and what the requirements are. And so we have a 12-month pause in the implementation date so that we can more accurately figure out how that's going to affect a lot of the projects, but we did not go to fully repeal the standards that were put in place, and I think that was a good compromise.
Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that greenhouse gas emissions, what it's doing is it's taking away the project-by-project portion of that, which is currently what law is right now, and then pushing back the portfolio phase for 1 year. But then that, with that portfolio phase, that pushes back the actual projects 3 years. And so the portfolio will be ready in 2028, and it will be affecting projects in 2032.
Thank you. Any follow-up, Representative West? Chair Kreisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the bill, both Chair Kosnick and Chair Cagle. Very quickly, you had mentioned Camp Ripley, Anist. I missed that, and I was trying to catch the reference. What was the reference to that? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kreisha, there's a group in Montana that's currently working through corridor ID for the Big Sky passenger rail. And so it would connect from Chicago, the current Empire Builder, and then would go up to Fargo-Moorhead area. And so with that, there's possibility of lines within Minnesota in certain areas. And some of the plans I've seen have Detroit Lakes, Fargo-Moorhead, Detroit Lakes, Staples, and then some more St. Cloud and then the Twin Cities. And so it's just one of those ideas that's out there, and there's a lot of support across states for that, but it's being led by the state of Montana.
A follow-up?
Yeah, just right. So thank you for that clarification. I want to make sure I got that right. And do you know, are those plans along the current Amtrak line? Are they using that same rail, Mr. Chair? And if you don't have, we can get this offline, too. I just caught me off guard with the reference.
Chair Cagle, any follow-up on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe it is on that current line, but, don't hold me to that.
Chair Kreisha.
And, Mr. Chair, Chair Cagle, if you could just give me the information, I'd love to be in touch with them. So thank you.
Any other member questions? Seeing none. The chair removes his motion that House File 2438, as amended, be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
The motion prevails. I also ask that nonpartisan staff may make any additional technical changes that are necessary to reflect the will of the committee, and I thank the committee chairs for their hard work. The last bill is 2783. Thank you. Next up is House File 2783, the Omnibus State Government Budget Bill. This bill will be laid over today and tomorrow. Once we've heard the elections bill, the two will be combined. We do have an amendment to the 2783. I bring the bill before us and ask for explanation of the A4 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I'll be happy to speak to the
Chair Claiborne.
I would like to move the A4 amendment adoption, please. And that you will see on the A4 amendment, lines 1.2 through 1.10 are revenue technical corrections. There was a provision in the 2021 tax bill that we should have picked up, and we failed to do so. So these are just removing the $100,000 from each of the numbers that we had originally in the bill to make the numbers correct. Lines 1.11 and 1.12 also refer to revenue, and line 1.11 is the taxpayer assistance grants, and line 1.12 refer to tax credits and outreach grants. These do not change the spending in the bill, but are corrections to the numbers. On lines 1.13, you will see a revisor fixed to an internal cross-reference. Line 1.14 and 1.15, you will see that we are correctly identifying the Senate, Government and Finance, Senate, State, and Local Government Policy and Finance Committee name. And then lines 1.16 through the remainder are revisor corrections.
Chair Nash, any comments on the A4 amendment?
None. Just wanted to thank nonpartisan staff for bringing this to our attention and making sure that we had everything that we needed. So Mr. Sullivan and Ms. Roberts were great to work with, as were our own partisan staff. So support the amendment.
Thank you. Any member questions regarding the A4 amendment? Chair Gomez.
Thank you. I guess I just wonder if I could ask nonpartisan staff, this is the first time hearing about the changes to the tax statutes, to the taxpayer outreach assistance grants. And so I'm just wondering if this makes the state gov bill a tax bill. I don't know. It's the first time hearing about it. So
that we would not do.
No. Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Staff. The changes that relate to the taxpayer assistance grants and the tax outreach grants were actually made after consulting the nonpartisan staff for the tax committee. It's does not change the tax statutes. It's merely a reallocation of two riders within the direct appropriations. And after consulting with Ms. Templin and Mr. Williams, they said this is the correct allocation.
Any follow-up text, Chair Gomez?
I just should have known our amazing staff were all over it. So thank you so much for that, Ms. Roberts and Mr. Chair. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Any other member questions regarding the A4 amendment? We'll renew the motion that the A4 amendment be placed on House File 2438. 2783. I'm getting my numbers mixed up today. Sorry about that. 2783. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. The amendment is adopted. The HF 2783 as amended is now before the committee to the bill. Chair Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill, House File 2783, as amended, is the 2025 State Government Finance Budget Bill. And the office funds the state constitutional officers, the legislature, and the 30 state agencies, boards, and commissions and councils, including the Minnesota Management and Budget, Minnesota IT, known as MINIT, the Department of Revenue, and the Department of Administration. We have a separate policy bill, so this is really a finance bill. I would like to bring to the committee's attention that in 2023, there was an all-time high spending in state government of $1.565 billion. This budget is about $40 million less, but it is well within our budget target. So this total spending for 2025 will be $1.167 billion. Within the bill, there are several provisions that are important to keep our state functioning well. There is an extension to a prior appropriation that has to do with finishing the work on the Capitol Mall. There is an extension for the Cutwell project for the Mississippi River at St. Anthony Falls. There are several provisions that deal with anti-fraud legislation, including bills that are from both sides of the aisle. There's an inclusion of a business filing fraud prevention act, which was carried by Representative Ryer. There is a healthy aging subcabinet, which is part of the legislative task force on aging that was held for the last 2 years. There are also changes to the certified public accountant standards. Representative Joy's state lottery retail provisions are included. Representative Kraft's transit assistance program is included. There is an advanced deposit wagering provision to help keep our resourcing industry free of drugs. And then Representative Nash, or Chair Nash, has also several reports that are in this bill as well. And I will stop talking and see if
Chair Nash.
Chair Nash has something.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, some of the other highlights of the bill, if you remember, I had House File 3 here, and the language in totality is in this bill, along with funding for four new employees at the OLA who will help with prevent future waste, fraud, and abuse from happening in our state. There are other provisions in here authored by Chair Torkelson on the ability for minority leads to request fiscal notes. There are some other things that have been put in here from other waste, fraud, and abuse efforts that have been undertaken by really both sides of the aisle. And I'll just take a moment and say that as we've been hearing about the strife in other bill negotiations, that Chair Cleburne and I worked very well together. And wanted to thank our partisan staff and our nonpartisan staff again for the immeasurable help that they gave us. I think, and we've said this a number of times, if we were both given a blank sheet of paper, that we would have written this bill quite differently. When Chair Torkelson told me my target, I asked if there was a negative sign in front of that number, and he reassured me that it was not. So we did the very best that we can. And I think that the other thing that we both agreed on very early was that the cuts that we were going to have to be making in this budget bill were going to be felt by all major agencies and constitutional officers to create a sense of fairness and spread the impact across those that were impacted by our bill. So once again, not the bill that I would have written on my own, and certainly the same for my co-chair. But we worked very well together, and I think we only stayed past 10 o'clock one night in negotiating. So I think that in totality, it's got a lot of really good policy that both sides of the aisle can support. And there are some letters in the packet that you may wish to peruse to see how other people assess the impact of the bill.
Thank you, co-chairs. I will turn to nonpartisan staff for review of the acquisition of the target.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The State Government Finance Committee received a target that allowed them to spend an additional $45 million in fiscal years 26 and 27 over their base. And the target in fiscal years 28 and 29 was also an additional $45 million over the base that was set in the February forecast.
Thank you. With that, we will turn to member questions. First up, Representative Cotiza Batum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Chair Cleburne, Chair Nash. I just wanted to flag particularly my appreciation for the inclusion of Representative Kraft's Metro Transit assistance bill. It was a bill that Chair West and I heard in Children and Families, and with your partnership, we're able to capitalize on a federal match for some of this federal IT funding that will allow the process to move forward a little bit. But appreciate the inclusion of that in there, and I think that from what we heard from Representative Kraft is that this program and the investment is going to projected to pay for itself in a very short amount of time. So my gratitude to you.
Thank you. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the co-chairs there at the front table. One thing that I had asked about several years ago, especially in the wake of COVID, was how much are we spending for renting office space that isn't being occupied? And now I know the governor has asked people to come back, at least on a part-time basis. Where do we stand with that? Have we realized any cost savings over the years or in this bill? Was that covered in your committee, that topic?
Representative Chair Cleburne.
Yes, I would say, and I'm not sure if management and budget is in the room that could actually, or admin, who could actually answer the total savings for you. But yes, there has been a significant reduction in the use of office space. Co-Chair Nash had the gavel, we did have an extensive review of the office space utilization plan. I encourage everyone to have a look at it. It is a very interesting read.
Chair Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Scott, yeah, we did actually do a very deep dive with admin to find out what are the numbers that are associated with the buildings that we own versus the buildings that we rent? What is the plan to begin bringing those people back onto the campus from the rented buildings? not something that we want to belabor with here because it's a very long report, but I'd be more than happy to get you a copy of that. And as we heard from admin, there was already underway an effort to begin pulling those people into campus-owned buildings. And we were very grateful for that. And I think in some of the work that we've done together, that may actually accelerate some of the migration back to the campus, because the operating increases that were requested were not funded at the levels that they were asked for. So that's going to facilitate, I think, people moving back to campus more quickly than they may have previously. But I will make a point to get that to you as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd appreciate that. That's all.
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to both the chairs for your work. My question, actually, Torkelson, is actually for you about the bill because it's a provision that is yours. I had not realized about your bill regarding minority fiscal notes, and I was not in the State Gov Committee, so didn't hear the discussion. I just wanted to just get a comment from you. I had been concerned about that proposal, just wondering that if you have the minority lead able to bring a request. I know as it is, it's hard for agencies to get fiscal notes out as quickly as we may want them to. It tends to be a really fraught process. And then to have a minority lead make requests, I'd be worried that it would actually delay fiscal notes for on bills that are actually have a chance of getting a hearing. I just want to get your comment, Mr. Chair, as to that. I will admit I had concerns when that was first proposed, and I was sort of surprised the notice was in this bill, and just wanted to get your comment about the merits of that.
Well, thank you, Chair Pinto. I'm actually going to turn it over to Chair Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Cleburne and I actually wanted to get an answer to this. And in consulting with different fiscal staff, the number is really a de minimis number, that it was not of an impact that really impacted the budget at all. So in consultation with fiscal staff and then predicting the number of times that would actually be done, it wound up concerning neither of us to the point where it raised a question mark. So and just in practice, I think that allowing the minority lead, speaking as somebody who's been the minority lead in recent years, to be able to request a fiscal note in advance of the bill coming to committee is just good practice.
And I
follow up.
Yeah, I would like to just add on to that for a moment. Just so everyone is clear, we were told it would be probably about five a year because it would be the substantial bills that are moving and probably not more than that. I would say to you that if I saw that it was being abused or if whoever sits in this chair in future years saw that it would be abused, then I would think we would need to reconsider that provision.
A follow-up, Chair Pinto.
Yeah, I'll just say it sounds like there's not a formal limit, so I suppose one could imagine the five a year could end up expanding, though I suppose as I'm thinking it through, there's a natural check there because, of course, the majority is in the majority, so if the majority is finding the minority is abusing it, the majority will probably just take it away. So anyway, that's helpful background from the chairs, and thank you, Chair Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Chair Pinto. The only thing I'd add is that the sooner fiscal notes are requested, the better. If there's going to be one requested, if it's done sooner in the process, that it works to everyone's advantage and gives us a better chance of actually getting those fiscal notes in a opportune moment in time. So with that, Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just a little confused by something you said, Chair Nash, so I'm looking for some clarity around the return to the office program. First, I'll just say not everybody agrees with that. I certainly know people who took jobs as state employees, and they lived quite a ways out because they were told those jobs would be fully remote. As we saw during COVID, people can work remotely and efficiently and effectively. So there are a lot of issues surrounding that. I do know of somebody as well, for her little division, she said, now we have to order all these office chairs, and it's going to cost $300,000 just to get our chairs that we need. And so I thought I heard you say that the return to office would actually save money, and I just wanted to get some clarity around that because I'm not understanding how that would work.
Chair Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And both Chair Cleburne and I will address this. Just to point out, Chair Mueller, we are not pushing what the governor had suggested as the return to work plan. What I was referencing was a plan that already existed within admin to begin looking at rented spaces that were not on campus, and that made sense to bring people back onto the campus to balance within the open spaces that we had in the different buildings across campus. So I've made it abundantly clear that the governor's decision to have people return to campus was on his own, and that we were not going to implement that on his behalf. But I was referencing the plan that admin already had. I think it was 2 years prior to this, to today, that it actually had been undertaken to look at rented spaces in perhaps St. Paul or other places. The agreements that were made, we have nothing to do with that at all. Yeah. That's all. I would refer you to the governor's office.
And I would just like to
Chair Clayborn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to reiterate, the state employees have been working. It's not a return to work. We were talking about making sure that we are utilizing state space that we own to the best of our ability to utilize that space, period. That's it. And whether or not people return to office or business needs, that is not a decision we would get involved in.
Follow-up, Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was really helpful clarification. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Verrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I was going to ask you something that I don't see in the bill, and maybe it's coming in the policy bill or maybe a standalone, but you haven't talked anything about the state employee contracts, and they have a huge impact on the state budget. And I've served on the Subcommittee on Employee Relations, I think, for 12 years now. I've actually lost track and was just reassigned to it again. But since the Subcommittee on Employee Relations power was gutted, essentially, there's very little power left. Most of it resides within your committee. Was there any conversation at all about the state employee contracts and the impact on the state budgets? The last contracts that came forward were a 5.5 in the first year of the biennium and 4.5 in the second year of the biennium, just across the board raises. And then there were many, many other raises of other types and other benefits beyond that, depending on the contract. But I'm wondering if there was any conversation about that, especially with the looming $6 billion deficit down the road.
Chair Clayborn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will address the question first, since I was the chair when we revised that policy. What state government does is we assign the agencies a budget. We are responsible for saying, what is our target? How much of this will be allocated to what agency? The agency are the professionals who know the work that they do, and they must negotiate their contracts within the budget that they are given. In the subcommittee, employee relations subcommittee that you were referencing, when looking back at that work, very seldom, I don't believe in the history for the period that I looked reviewed, has the legislature ever interfered with those contracts. But what it did is those contracts were left in limbo until a certain time period had passed. So people didn't know if their raises were actually going to be their raises, if their insurance was actually going to be their insurance. So we, as co-chairs, say, this is the budget you get. Operate your agency as the professionals that you are within the budget you have. And that's how we leave it. Thank you.
Follow-up, Chair Verrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Nash or Chair Nash had something to say as well.
Chair Nash.
Actually, I don't.
Oh, okay. I read his. So then I would like to say something. So one, imagine that. So one impact that is outstanding that in my area of higher ed that impacts the Mid State system tremendously is when the governor and MMB negotiate with the contracts. So there's a pattern bargaining. It's pattern bargaining, as you know. So AFSCME and MAPE, they pattern it, and then everybody falls in line with some small variations after that. That also impacts our MinState system, and some even in the University of Minnesota, but primarily MinState, and it throws our budget out of whack so terribly. In fact, so much so that there was a news release that talked about that they may have to raise tuition by 9% to accommodate whatever they don't know is going to be the state employee contracts that come forward, because they don't have control over all of their employee contracts. They have some, but not all. And the ones that they don't have control over really inflate their budgets. And so that is why the question, and those are things when I was the chair of the Subcommittee on Employee Relations, we got to dig into all that and have those conversations. And no, we did not have the vote to, like, stop a contract, but we definitely had influence and had voices into those contracts and had those concerns. And when the Subcommittee on Employee Relations doesn't meet, which it hasn't met in quite some time, then that opportunity is lost. And I just want to put that on the record that there is, it's a more complex issue, and maybe you and I can talk about this offline, but it's a very complex issue, and I'd like to see the full authority back in the Subcommittee on Employee Relations so that we can have these full vettings and have that conversation, because apparently you haven't talked about contracts yet. And it's a little, I mean, it would be nice if MMB and the governor's office negotiated contracts within those parameters, but that doesn't always happen. And it does not happen at MnState. Thank you.
Any no comments?
I would just say I would
Chair
be happy.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would be happy always, Chair Eric, to have conversations with you and to learn from your experience. Thank you.
Thank you. I do have a question myself regarding a small item in the bill, but it's the St. Anthony Falls study for the cutoff dam. I see that's been delayed by a year. Do you have any more information on that?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. That was a provision that was in last year's bill, and the work has not been concluded, and therefore we extended the deadline for it. There is no additional appropriation. I can't read right-handed, so go ahead.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. As you know, working in a natural environment, there are natural hazards. And if everyone will recall, we had very, very heavy rains in the beginning of last
year.
Rain.
Okay.
Yeah. And so the work was delayed. They couldn't do it because of the heavy rain and being able to keep the workers safe. So the project was delayed. And so this is not a new appropriation. It just allows them to continue to use the appropriation previously granted, weather permitting.
And Mr. Chair, it's a study on the hydrology and the geology of that particular fall or nick point, as it's called in geology. And it's just to make sure that they understand and they've got their arms all the way around what's happening to that particular geographic feature. I think it's a Representative Jordan effort that I don't know that anybody opposed it anywhere along the line in the last number of years. But it was just a continuation of that particular funding by kicking out the due date.
No, thank you for that. Well, just for members' information, it's an underwater dam that was installed a long time ago, and nobody really knows what shape it is actually in. And should it fail, we would have a catastrophic situation in downtown Minneapolis. So just curiosity. That's
and
all.
Chair, if I may say, 15 communities rely on that cut wall for their water, as does the airport. And so if it fails, not only would we have rapid erosion, as we saw in Rapidan, that's failure this year, but it would be catastrophic to people having availability to clean water. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other member questions or comments to the bill? Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I know we've had some conversations about the Minnesota Advisory Council on Infrastructure. Can you show me, is that under the admin?
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you. Actually, you will see that in the repealer. I believe it's in the repealer.
Perhaps Mr. Sullivan can tell us exactly where that is, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sullivan.
He wrote the thing.
It is on page 2 of the repealer.
Yep. Mr. Chair, that's Chair Claiborne is correct. It's on page 41 of the first engrossment. It's the Subdivision 2 Advisory Council on Infrastructure repeal.
Are we good?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just really disappointed to see that in here. It didn't even get a chance to get started. It was something that was going to be the board members were being seated as and they were set to meet for the first time in May 25. I think that it's a real big mistake to pull this out because if we can start to coordinate and collaborate on infrastructure as well as train our locals on how to be best asset managers they can, this is going to save our state money in the long run. And so this is a really small investment to make sure that our infrastructure is going to be what our state needs, as well as being built properly. And so I'm just super disappointed to see that in the bill.
Representative Chair Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Cagle, I appreciate the many conversations that we have had about this. And as Co-Chair Nash stated, when we originally drafted the bill that I would draft is very different from the bill he would draft. And this was a piece that I'm not exactly happy about, but it is part of the compromise piece. And as you know, this bill is moving at some future date, and we will have an opportunity to revisit this during conference, potentially.
And Mr. Chair, and Chair Cagle, you know, we made decisions and we looked at different things, and as Chair Claiborne said, negotiations were such that things that we agreed on were not always something that either side was necessarily excited about, but eventuality being what it was, we had to make decisions, and that was one of the things that was repealed.
Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the chairs for this bill. As we all know, the Attorney General's office, one of the really important things that they do in their role protecting consumers, protecting the people of Minnesota, protecting the public coffers, is that they run the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit. And, These are really, like, we talked about this recently, like, people who would go after this money that we spend, these precious public dollars that we spend to ensure that elders and people with disabilities and babies in our state have health care, really, it's so important that we have tools to go after them. And our Attorney General, has recoup tens of millions of dollars a year that the Medicaid Fraud Unit Control Unit recoups. You know, they hold people accountable. They address. They strip fraudulent entities of their nonprofit status. These are just really critical. This critical function that they play. And I know that there's some changes in the bill that I think are Representative Norris. Bill, perhaps, and I know that Representative Norris has also introduced a bill this year, to beef up the Medicaid Fraud Unit. And, I know we have budget considerations, but I just wanted to put in a plug and say that these are the kinds of investments in our constitutional offices that reap really major benefits for the people of Minnesota and for our budgets. And so I'm just looking, it's in Article 2, Section 20, so it's 3320. It looks like it's kind of establishing some penalties associated with Medicare assistance fraud, and it's not crossing anything out. So I guess I was just wondering if one of you guys could explain, what's the change to the penalties for medical assistance fraud in the bill, and like kind of what is it replacing? Because I'm not seeing it right in the language.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Sullivan could maybe describe the changes that were made in the bill. But just to preface that, as he's getting to there, Chair Claiborne and I both agreed that funding the Medicaid fraud was quite important, because I know it was Representative Norris. I believe Representative Schumacher was on that bill as well, or had something similar to it. But we did not go after the funding for the Medicaid fraud. We'd made cuts in other areas for the AG. But that was not one of the ones that we made, because we recognize the importance of doing that for the benefit of Minnesotans.
And I would also refer you.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Apologies, Mr. Chair. I would also refer you to page 5 of the repealer in the back, where it shows section 609.466, medical assistance fraud. You'll see the language there that's been pulled out. Excuse me.
Follow-up, Chair Gomez?
No. I'm good.
And do you want Mr. Sullivan to continue? Or?
Oh, Mr. Mr. Chair,
just Chair Gomez.
If Mr. Sullivan just could tell me what the difference in the existing penalty and the penalty that is in front of us, that was all I was trying to figure out. Thank you.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, Chair Gomez and members, yeah, the language, as Chair Cleborn pointed out, and as I think Chair Gomez pointed out, is on page 33. And you see, starting at the bottom of that page, subdivision 2 penalties, there's basically a tier of penalties available for prosecutors based on the severity of the theft of medical assistance, basically the fraud committed. My understanding is currently the statute that's repealed allows a penalty of up to 2.5 years of imprisonment, and you'll see that the most a person could be imprisoned for under the new medical assistance fraud statute is up to 20 years if the amount that was obtained fraudulently is more than $35,000.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Any more questions, Chair Gomez, or comments on that? Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. And I just wanted to make it really clear, in talking with the Attorney General's office about this, these are criminal actors. These are not people who've made a simple mistake. These are criminal elements who go after our systems and defraud our state. So that's who would be penalized under this.
Thank you, Chair Claiborne. Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a fiscal note for the Department of Corrections for that?
Chair Claiborne.
Not to my knowledge. I don't believe that we have one. No.
Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if nonpartisan staff can tell us if there's going to be a cost to corrections for that, because we can barely even keep lights on right now with our operating adjustment and target.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, I can't speak to the fiscal note piece, but I do know that Representative Norris's bill, House File 2354, it was previously heard before state government in both Public Safety and the Judiciary Committee.
Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I know we heard it, but if we're going to enact this law and there's going to be a cost to the Department of Corrections, we need to know that, and we need to know who's covering that. So hopefully you can work with the co-chairs to get that information. Thank you.
I appreciate you bringing that to our attention.
Any other member questions on this bill or the spreadsheet? Seeing none, House File 2783 is amended, is laid over.
Thank you,
chairs, for your work. We'll return to that tomorrow, I believe, to merge it with the elections bill. Anything enlightenment from you, Representative Stevenson, regarding tomorrow or the rest of the week?
Looking forward to seeing you tomorrow, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson, co-chair. With that, members, this meeting is adjourned.